Yes, and welcome to the Soul Savage Show here on Studio W The Buzz. Man, we got a special guest. I had to play that song. I know it wasn't in the lineup, but that's my favorite.
Oh, you doing the intro.
I did that. No, I'm going to give it to you right now. But, no, sure will. Is he with us yet?
Yeah, he's on right now.
Hey, Will, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you?
Man, I didn't mean to, disrupt the program, but I had to play my favorite jam coming in there, man. My hero. But I'm going to let Q-Lin take over. I'm not taking over your show, Q-Lin. Welcome to the Soul Savage Show with Q-Lin. Great.
Sure, Will.
All right,
let's introduce why before I tell you what's going on. We got a Grammy, to all the listeners out there, welcome to Soul Savage Radio. We have a special guest on, as Will said, a Grammy Award winning musician, is phenomenal. One of his songs that just played that gets into the show. And so, without further ado, I'm going to introduce our guest, Mr. Sure Will. How you doing?
Hello. Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How you doing?
I'm good. I am good.
He got the special claps just for you. I don't know if he do that on your show, but he got it going on.
Oh, thank you.
special effects. Hey, thank you so much for coming on and taking time out of your schedule to just rap to us real quick. I get really deep on this show. We get really deep into music questions with our guests that are, you know, musically inclined, so I feel comfortable doing it now because my two other co-hosts, they're gone this week. It's just me and Will. And so, I know Will got a lot of rap. He excites so throughout the show. So, cause he gets to have the show all to himself now. and so we can rap a little bit if we ain't taking too much of your time, but I'm just going to ask my questions, and if Will got some, he can jump in. But my first questions are, just your background, it's sort of similar to mine because I remember reading your bio, and when you were in church, you said you were enamored with what was going on, the drums, and then I guess somebody needed a drummer at that time, I guess, and you just got on the drums, and then you just started playing you've been playing ever since. And so I want to know what was it that draw you to playing, or was it just them telling you to get on there? Like, what was it that clicked for you playing on the drums first, musically?
Well, I come out of a church family, a singing family. My mom and my uncle and my aunt, they had a group called the Josie Trio. And that's on my mom's side, and then my dad's side, there's the gospel side as well. So music was always in me. But I remember seeing this guy playing the drums, and his foot was going one way, his right hand on the hi-hat going another way, and this other guy on the snare in a whole total different way. And it's something I wanted to learn at, but I never thought I would get it the first time, you know. So that's what kind of what drove me to music. And then I moved with my grandmother at an early age, so I had to find some way to stay awake to keep from getting my butt beat for falling asleep in church. So that was another inspiration, you know. But that's what drove me to music, you know. Always hearing it was always around me. The gospel part, you know, I heard the R&B outside of my grandmother's house, you know. So that's how I got into music.
But your whole background is eerie because it, like, resembles mine, because you started playing when you were six, and then was it 16 when you started playing the piano?
I was 13. I met a guy named 13. George. Oh. I met a guy named George Davis. They called him Chief. And his dad was blind. He played piano. But he was known as putting together these the historical choirs. And the more I hung around Chief, the more I became interested in learning. And then by the age of 13, I started hanging with him. And he moved from piano to Hammond organ. So that left me free to learn piano. And I was hooked ever since.
Right, and I saw where you learned Andre Crouch chords. I wanted to know, like, what was it that, like, clicked for you in terms of playing? Like, what was that moment where it was like, I know it's like a journey with playing, but what was it that what age was it to where it all started clicking for you musically, to where you sort of, like, connected the musical dots in terms of, like, oh, these gospel chords are similar to blues chords and, like, jazz chords and all that sort of run in the same. It's just a different, you know, basically, like, what age was it that made you connect those dots musically to kind of figure it out?
Well, early on, I heard some music by Ramsey Lewis. And Ramsey had that gospel and jazz. And then my generation, Andre Crouch was our version of Kirk Franklin.
He was a
contemporary artist. So, most gospel songs is A flat, and I learned a song by Andre Crouch. And then I tried to mix a little bit of Ramsey Lewis with it. But then my mom was known as well. She had put together a choir for Andre Crouch and the Disciples who were coming to Buffalo to perform. And my mom's choir was backing them up. So after they did sound check, and I was already on stage with my mom's choir, I walked over to Andre and asked him, could he show me a few chords? He showed me a few chords. I went to church that next day, because this was on a Saturday, I went to church that next day and tried them chords. And they banned me for playing for 2 months. The bishop told me those type of chords was belonged in a juke joint, not in church.
Right.
And then that generation, when you go to explain yourself, they consider talking back. So the first thing they did was call my grandmother and say, he was talking back.
Right.
And then when they released me to play again, I just continued to play to grow from those contemporary chords. That was the inspiration, like I said, Andre Crouch was like awesome back then, He had like Danny Bell Hall, Tata Vega, along with his sister, Sandra Crouch, and they were doing something totally different than the Hawkins, Walter and Edward Hawkins. And Andre, like I said, he was contemporary. So those things were actually a challenge for me because it was different than the traditional church, like the devotional songs, was traditional at church. But, early on, I just had the, I wanted to do something different. I wanted to kind of stand out, from the traditional church musician.
Mm-hmm. That's so crazy saying that they almost made you. It wasn't as taboo. It was like, late 90s when I played the drums first and, it was, I remember they had those moments, like, they was trying to play staple singers. But it was, the crazy thing is, a lot of that gospel music had R&B chords in. Like, Walter Hawkins had reggae riffs in the rhythm section and stuff like that, and had guitar riffs and bass riff with that was reggae sound. And then Clark Sisters, they made, You Brought the Sunshine, and she actually said that she took, Stevie Wonder's jamming. Like that whole, like, rhythm she took from, Stevie Wonder's, jamming song. So I thought it, I always thought it was odd that people had that reaction. And then also, if you even go back to that, like, you know, Ray Charles and Sam Cooke, like, all that was gospel music. And then right. they came from that room. So it was always weird to me. But I was saying it was similar for me because that's the only way I knew how to understood gospel music was putting contemporary music in there. And I went further than you. You was playing Andre Crouch. I was playing, like Pimp C, Too Short, because that was I grew up on hip-hop, like 90s hip-hop, and so it was those, they were sampling like old school records, and so I would take the bait, they would like Too Short was sampling Bootsy Collins' Rubber Band album, and I would like just take those little melodies and play it during church, but I would try to flip it. But some of the older musicians, they're like in their 70s, and they encouraged it, and I was like, y'all really want me to play these chords, these hip-hop chords? And then, and a lot of times they didn't know what I was playing unless I made it obvious, but I always thought, I think it's interesting to hear people's artists or musicians' background in church. It's always similar. So my other question is getting to what when you did your first, I guess, professional gig, you were 16, you opened for Al Jarreau.
My high school band, there was a group called Straightforward. I don't know how big they were at the time, but they were supposed to open up for him at Shays. They called it Shays Theater, which was the concert hall. And they got caught in the snow in Ohio. So it was a last-minute thing. And we wound up opening up for them, and I thought it was so awesome because I had heard some of Al Jarreau's early stuff, like Alonzo, and in fact, that was even before Moonlight, the soundtrack that he did for Moonlight, and he wound up, you're going to go far. I was like, okay, but I was 16, you know, so I wound up meeting him years later, and that's how I wound up hooking up with him. But, yeah, I was 16 when that was my first, we got paid.
Right. That's always the goal. But, I want to get to this, like your break into touring or being a professional musician. Your break into the industry was playing for Janet Jackson during the Rhythm Nation tour. What I want to know about that? How did that happen?
There was a tour before that one called the Janet Tour. Yeah.
Was it the gospel one?
No. For Janet Jackson, there was a tour before that called, it was the Janet Tour.
Okay.
It was her project.
The debut.
There was an album, before Rhythm Nation. Or, my fact, it was the album before Control.
How did that happen? I mean, in terms of you getting an opportunity to do that, did you have to audition for it, or was it just by chance or something, somebody?
I guess it was more like being at the right place at the right time, you know, working with a few artists, musicians and producers that were on that project, the very first one. And how I wind up getting it, I can't even remember the guy's name. That's how far back that is. but I wasn't the first. There were two Rhythm Nation tours. There was the first one, really three, because Chucky Booker wound up being the first music director for that tour. And then Rex Silas was the second one, and I was the third one. So, and again, it was like of being associated with some musicians. That's how I got that, you know, and they saw the leadership that I had. So that was really cool. That was fun. That was.
Wow.
Being that big mass,
right.
that big mass tour, you know, and I'm like, oh man, people set my stuff up. Oh man, they set it up for me. Oh, cool. And then all you had to do was actually show up. So that was big to me at that time.
Oh wow! And you said Chucky Booker was the MD for the first one. Who is the for the Rhythm Nation? Who is the MD for the second one?
His name was Rex Silas, and I wound up doing something with Rex. Rex was like, he wrote a lot of stuff for Natalie Cole, Brian McKnight. And Rex and I did a show last year with Stoney Dixon, bass player. I mean, he plays for everybody. So it was really cool, you know, sitting down and they had the same similar stories that I had, you know. We just traded the stories on how the tour was and how it went and how we liked it and all. It was really cool. It was really cool. But, and you know, it's, you know, cats that you hear about at the time, you're like, oh man, that's the man, that's the dude, you know. And you finally get a chance to sit down and chop it up with them. So that was like really cool.
Wow, and just from that start, and you just kept going with it. What was that the ultimate goal for you, like during that time period when after you did the Rhythm Nation tour and all that? What was the goal, like after that, in terms of just to keep the consistency of like touring? And was that the goal or?
Oh, the ultimate goal was to stay busy. You know,
right.
Because that's the ideal of it, you know, is trying to stay busy. And trying to get on the next tour, you know, with the other artists, but then having a reputation of actually being a hard worker.
Right. And I see your list. For the people listening, and he's worked with and toured with so many people, from Janet Jackson to Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, Al Jarreau, Mary J. Blige, Sade, George Duke, New Edition. What is it like in terms of that? Because it's different for different kind of musicians. You know, it's like different kinds, like back ends. He would do, you know, small, quaint spots to, you know, certain theaters and stuff like that. What's the energy like working for those kind of artists? What is it just the expectation of just working hard of that, or is it expectation different when it's they're essentially your boss, but is it the energy different playing in certain venues than it is playing in a quaint spot to where it's just like a house band or something like that, somebody that's just there for that night, that's booked on for that night? Is the energy different from with those national artists? Is it different from doing any other gig that you've done before that wasn't on
each artist is different, you know. Each artist, you have to be at the top of your game.
Mm-hmm.
And relieving them, letting them know they have nothing to worry about, you know, as far as you trigger into the next song, or you playing those chords for that ballad. You know, you make sure they have nothing to worry about in the transition from song to song or city to city. That's what's expected, you know, as a musician or as a music director, that you take the pressure off where they can go out and have the best show. I can't say that there was one tour that was better than the next one, because it was a job. You know, it was a job that you have a reputation that, you know, they have nothing to worry about. You know, nothing at all.
And just sort of getting along to my next question in terms of that skill, in terms of, I guess I should ask, what age, or when did it get to the point where you were like, that you wanted to do your own album? Like, when was that time frame for you? And what era was that?
That you wanted to do? 08, 09. George Duke told me, his kid, I think you should start doing your own stuff. You know, and I was like, yo, so you're firing me? He's like, no. But I think it's time that the world just started hearing you. So I started writing. And actually, the first project that I released wasn't the first project. It was actually the second project, but I released it first. Because my first one was actually called Confusion. And it was all jazz fusion. I don't know. I just didn't have the faith in myself to say that was the one to come out with first, which was a smart decision because the world got to hear the single, My Hero, off the second one. That's the one that put me on the smooth jazz map.
Right.
You know.
And just speaking of, oh man, I love Judge Duke so much. Rest on to him. But well, I was going to ask you specifically, what was it like in your experience? What was it like playing with him? Because I had my own. I had one experience playing with him, and it was like one of the greatest moments. But what was it like working with George Duke?
It was like the god of jazz, god of R&B, the god of music. Being around him on a regular basis, that's what it was. I could have sworn when he said, my name is, hello, Will, my name is George Duke. You heard those voices like the Simpsons. Oh. Oh, I learned so much. And I find myself doing a lot of stuff on a regular basis that is like, George, sounding like George. I find it on a regular basis, man, where I'm like, oh my God, that's something George would do. But that was the best experience. That was one of the best. That's at the top of the top three.
Yeah.
The top three. And, the top two was actually playing with him and Al together.
Oh wow.
That's number two. You got legends. There's a story I have. We were doing sound check, and they wanted to test Al's mic. So I was messing around with this song he has called Roof and Garden. And when we got to the certain part, he goes and scatting. I was going. I was in another world doing his part scatting. And all of a sudden, man, the music started getting a little lighter. And then I was like, oh, God, he's behind me, right? Yep. And he says, I'm going to have you do that on the show. I'm like, you got to be kidding. Nope. And sure enough, he did. He made me do it during the show. So that's something I'll never forget. I won't.
Oh, man. Man, so and just to stay on George a little bit, but in the experience, I mean, in like, was there ever moments to where he had like a lot of teachable moments of certain things, or was it just, because for me, I feel like he created an atmosphere to where a freedom for musicians to play, but then also he had a direction and a certain sound that he wanted. But also in that same breath, he let you do your thing. Did you experience that in terms of the freedom of playing?
Which one, George or Al?
George. Sorry, it both is. If you want to, it doesn't. But mostly, it was just a George answer.
Their expectations were out of this world. You know, they expected the best from you. They expected you to do your homework. They expected you to grow. The biggest teaching that they taught me was to remain teachable.
Mm-hmm.
Never think you know everything about it. And felt free and comfortable playing with it. You know, I still do no rhyme and no reasons in my show. And that was like one of the blessed songs of me because I was around when they recorded it. You know, so, and then Al, when George passed, Al did a version of No Rhyme, No Reason with Kelly Price. So, you know, and that was like a whole another avenue or world opened up from that one song. So, it was just, man, they always wanted you to have fun as well. You know, even though it was a job, know what you're doing and enjoy doing it.
That sounds like, and it's just amazing the journey of musicianship, because I like quoting jazz musician Sonny Rollins, because he made it like everything makes sense. I read an article where he said this and it made so much sense. He says that he always tried to get the technical parts right and playing, and then let the universal spirit take over. And so I wanted to know, what did you have a similar feeling with that in terms of just, it was just so deep in a musician way, like just figuring out what that is, the technical parts, and then letting everything else come to you as it comes. Do you experience that same thing with playing music?
It's like if I have to learn a song for another artist, I'll learn it the way it was written, and then I'll make it mine. And let the artists choose which one they want. But free of expression, and especially if the artists allow you to. You know, because when you're doing a project, the most important person in that room is that artist.
Right, exactly.
You know, and it's what they want. So, but learning it the way that it was written, and then putting your own twist or making it yours, is always fun. Mm-hmm. It's always fun. You might not do it in the show, but it's always fun.
Right. And I wanted to ask, you keep getting right in line with my question. It's a thing. What I'm noticing is mostly with younger musicians. I don't really, usually the veteran musicians, I feel, have more of a purist kind of way with it. And then also the younger artists, the musicians, I feel as though they have this thing of, that they feel like if you just get a lot of views through Instagram or Facebook or Twitter, that's going to make people notice them. And they have this thing called chops. I don't know what it is. It's just certain musicians, drummers, pianists, they just want to do a bunch of licks and a bunch of just shedding, and not necessarily want to focus on the pocket. And it was always interesting to me, you know, how that perspective is, that's what it is. And you, mostly the younger musicians that I see, that's all they want to do is do shedding and not necessarily worry about the pocket. What's your feeling on that in terms of, because they feel like if they showcase how good they are with the chops, that's going to get them gigs. And I'm like, I just started getting into the whole, like, consistently on social media, and I've been professional musician for like 11 years, and I've never posted myself playing. I always stuck to the pocket. Like, I feel like if it calls for the song, then that's necessary to do certain things. Certain songs call for that. But if it doesn't call for that, I'm going to stay in the pocket and try to figure out what I'm doing, what my sound is in that pocket, and might do my own thing to it. But it's certain young ones think that if they showcase themselves, that's going to get them gigs. And I always thought that was such an oxymoron. What do you feel about that? Because I don't agree with it at all. I don't think that my frame works at all.
Say, for instance, a drummer and a bass player, I want a pocket bass player or drummer.
Right.
I want one that can actually give me four different versions of what's going on. But as far as all the riffs and all that other stuff, that's unnecessary. You know, you want a dependable musician that you can hear, not a musician that you're going to always see. You know, and the cat's doing all those wrestling stuff. Man, right. You don't want him on that next gig.
Right, exactly. Oh,
you want one that's going to follow the vocalist. If you're in the church scene, that's going to follow the vocalist. And if you in the R&B and the jazz, you want somebody who's going to hold it down. Don't give me all that unnecessary stuff, you know, because it's when they do that, they're trying to be seen.
Right.
You know, and it might not be your gig. You playing on it, but it may not be your gig.
I always felt that way. And it's a big argument because it's a lot of them that on there, they ask that question all the time on Facebook. And it's like, and I've debated a little bit with some of them, but I just feel like that's honestly what it is. And a lot of them can't get the concept of that's what's going to get you there. They think it's all about the technique of, oh, I can do so many licks in this one time, like on the beat or whatever. But I'm like, you're taking away, when you do that live, it's a lot of artists that allow the freedom for people to solo, but a lot of them want to solo throughout the song. And I'm like, it's a time and a place for it. And when I perform live, I want the crowd to be involved with it. I want to play as best as I can. I want to play the song that they heard so many years ago the same way it was played, but also add my thing to it, but I'm not going to take away the essence of what the song is. And I think that's the lost part of some of these musicians that don't get. And I think most of it is their lack of history, because a lot of them, they don't look to older records. They don't do their musical history, I feel as though. Do you feel as though, that's just my opinion. I feel like there's a lack of musical history in them searching for songs that's other than what they're hearing in the moment. Do you feel that way with some of the younger musicians you hear, that they lack musical history?
No, I believe they took one of those, it's all about me pills. You know, it's a thing where when you're out here doing something for somebody else's gig, you know, you shine when that artist lets you shine, you know. Say for instance, you got Jeff Johnson on keyboards, and Jeff Johnson, go ahead, give it to me, Jeff, and they'll solo. But on the other side, it ain't all about you, that gig. You know, so I don't, my thing is you know when to step forward and you know when to step back. You have to differential that. You know, if it's your gig, you can do what you want to do on your gig. But when you're backing up an artist, you know, then you got to respect them and know their stuff.
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well. I have only got like a couple more questions, and Will can jump in. But I wanted to ask, with all the artists you played for, in terms of, was there ever like moments to where, I guess not necessarily discouragement, but it was just those, one of those moments in a, whatever that gig, like it, you had your highs, like it was the highest it could be, your in terms of that amazing feeling of playing, but did you ever have any lows, or how did you get out of that low moment of playing?
How did I get out of that low moment? I did a gig, I did a gig playing for an artist right after I got the news that my grandmother passed. That was the worst, you know, because my mind wasn't in it, but I still, you know, got it moving. I still moved on and did it. But that was the worst. I did a church gig where pastor tried to make it to be all about him, and he was just introducing someone, and he asked, he wanted the music to stop, and he made a comment. So I'm outspoken. I am. I'm a New Yorker. I am outspoken. So it took everything in the blood of Jesus to keep from me waiting until after church and tell him how I felt about what he had to say. I know I don't take any personal issues or mistakes to the next show. If I felt that I didn't play a certain song to my best, I actually went back to the hotel or hung out and played and practiced that until I got it where it was suffice for me. So, that's how that is that one.
You say it again.
I said that answers that one, because you know, it's something, sometimes you, when you answer a question like that, you kind of think about it. See, this is, from the generation I started to where it is today, you know, there's no more storytellers. There's not a bunch of substance to what's going on. I see that as music-wise, there are more women that are trying to tell the story than the men. Right. You know, and I'm not putting any artists down or anything, though. But like I stated, I come from a generation of storytellers. So I always wanted to say, for instance, I'm Jasmine Sullivan. I bust a window out your car.
Mm.
That's the story. It tells you what you did, why you did what you did, how you felt about doing what you did, and then it tells you how it ended.
Right.
So that's what we need to bring back today into this this music generation, the story.
I 100% agree. And I think I got like three more questions. One of them that I had in terms of...
You said that 4 questions ago.
No, I did not. I said I had some more questions and you could go. Well, we got like the whole show. Can you calm down? Okay? I told you I got a lot of questions. They keep popping up.
Yeah, no, about 40 minutes worth.
Not you, sure, Will. I'm talking about this Will Brown. I need for you to go get your Pinot Grigio, whatever you got, whatever you drinking on tonight. Get that real quick, okay? I'm going to throw it to you in just a second. Hold on just a second. I only got a few more. I was going to ask. That's another thing on this show. The owner of this network, he has, I don't know if it's a favoritism, but he's always coming at me on this show. Like, all my other co-hosts, I was gone on vacation in couple weeks, and they let him talk for all, you know, forever. He gets mad at me because I won't let him talk. And so that's the dynamic. So he's always hostile all the time.
Oh, so it's out there. Oh, you don't want me to talk.
No, I don't. No, I'm trying to conduct the like I'm doing now. Okay, I just wanted to get that side note. Okay, I'm about to throw it back to you, Will. Hold on just a second. I'm going to ask him these three more questions. This one I wanted to ask in terms of, now women lose my train of thought. I should have wrote this one down because I knew he was going to make me forget. I was trying to make it come back up in my head. Okay, I figured it out. In terms of, what was it? Was there any time period in your life to where you were trying to be specific with what kind of genre of music, or was it just whatever felt natural, whatever came to you, that's what you did? Was there any decision you made to like pick the primary, like this is primarily what I'm going to play, or what was it that you wanted to play, jazz, or was it just intersectional throughout your career of you playing all the types of genres or whatever that came your way? Was that sort of the flow of it? Of just, you know, whatever came up in terms of gig-wise?
I never lock myself in one genre. I played with Garth Brooks, Billy Joel. So I'm never wanted to lock myself up there, because what you do when that genre goes down, I always wanted to spread it around. I got in a smooth jazz, chose me. I didn't choose it. It chose me. Someone asked me why did I get into smooth jazz. I told them I ain't got to worry about getting shot. But,
Exactly.
But it chose me because of expression. There's no boundaries on the expression of jazz. And I want to come and play. There's a song that I do in the show, and my shows, I do maybe a 5-minute solo and one key, one note. And you may not be able to imagine that, but look it up on YouTube. It's things that hasn't been done. So I always want to stretch my boundaries and do something new. But I never wanted to lock myself up in one genre. Who knows? I might come out with a bluegrass album one day.
Right.
You never know.
Oh, God.
You never know.
And also, I wanted to, these are more lines of the award shows. I guess it's the same expectation, but what's the difference between, like, just doing a regular live tour versus playing an award show? Is it just the intensity of the timing, or, cause I was gonna get to, like, you playing for Adele. I was wanting to know how that, relationship started, or how did you play in the 2006 Grammy Award? Cause I remember that. I watched it live. I remember when it happened.
The Grammy?
2016, that's what I meant to say. I don't know why I said 2006, but, 2016 Grammy Award. How did that come about in terms of you accompanying Adele on the piano? How did that go?
I had a gig out the at the Bel Air hotel, and I got near a little early, and my room wasn't ready. So the concierge told me, says, "Well, Mr. Showell, you're welcome to have something to eat, order something off the menus on us and in the lounge, and we'll come get you when your room is ready." So I says, okay. So I went to the lounge, and they had just unwrapped this Yamaha grand piano, baby grand. And so I ordered off the menu, and then I asked the bartender, I says, "You mind if I play a piano?" He says, "No, don't mind. If you play..." You know, so I went and sat there, and you have to play your surroundings when you're somewhere. For instance, if I'm at the Elks Club, I'm going to play some Marvin Gaye, I'm going to play some Luther or something. But I was in Bel Air, so I wound up playing some Billy Joel stuff, and like Piano Man and all. And there were two gentlemen that came over and asked me, did I know how to read music? And I says, yes. And do I play by ear? I says, yes. And he asked me the craziest question, which one you'd rather use? I said, either or. You know, it doesn't matter. But if I play by ear, I'll remember it for years to come.
Wow. You know, really?
Yeah.
Ultimately what I played by ear is, at first I know how to read music when I started playing the piano, but then when I got in church, it's mostly I was playing by ear, But I could never, like, I got to write down the notes and stuff like that for me to remember, because I can't remember off the top of my head. But you can remember a song, like, or, I mean, now, like, can you remember, like, all those songs, like, by ear?
I remember the first full song that I learned.
Wow.
I still remember
that's
that.
Crazy.
Yeah,
I want to know your memory exercise, like, what's that like? I need to know what it is that the health-wise, like, what is it that you eat? You eat more blueberries that's health conscious? Like, I need to know the rest, because I forget everything.
I need French your whole fries. It's eating French fries on a Tuesday. No, I'm just kidding.
That's hilarious.
No, there's no regimen at it, you know, it's just...
You just have a strong memory, because I can't remember what I played the other night.
Really?
Because there's so many songs, like, when you go through, like, 7 to 8 songs, and that's just in case songs, and then you got to assign, like, maybe 3 to 4 we're doing in a set or whatever, 15, 20 minutes or whatever, and I got extra songs just in case. It's hard to remember that, but that is a skill, like, a few possess, so I just want to acknowledge, like, how amazing that is that you can remember all that. But go ahead with your story in terms of, I think I cut you off.
Because you need to acknowledge that you are over your limit.
No, I'm not. I was just into the story and what he was saying. I was just admiring how amazing it was that he can remember all the songs. Sorry, Will, I know you don't play anything, but these records on here, I was just trying to relate to a musician. I know that. All right, no. I'm making him mad in a minute. Go ahead, show Will. Go ahead with your story. I cut you off between that. Go.
So, that's basically how I got the gig. You know, they asked me to meet them later on that evening, and so I had learned the song, and I met them down there, and next thing you know, the next morning they were escorting me down to the Ritz-Carlton downtown. It's a very chic and 15-star place, hotel in L.A.
Yep.
And but they never told me who I was playing for until...
Oh, they were secretive.
I never
right.
found that out until later on that day when she came down. And when she came in, I still didn't realize who she was until later on that evening. Well, it was the following day, but the evening. Then that's when I realized. And she had to tell me exactly who she was. You know, I knew she said she was Adele. But the Adele that I had last saw was not the Adele that I saw that evening.
You talking about the short-haired Adele, you remember it, or is it the...
Yeah, she lost so much weight.
Oh, yeah, that too, right.
She had lost so much weight. She had actually came into herself. And you got to remember, she had on sweatsuit, you know.
Right.
But it's still been bothering me until... I started asking a bunch of questions, and then she finally said, "Will, you don't know who I am." I said, "No." She said, "Hello." I was like, "Oh my God, oh!" So I did the mild mannered freak out, you know. Oh,
right.
Oh, okay. Oh.
She probably enjoyed that you didn't know that you didn't know who she was off the bat. That probably. Made her feel good.
She shared that. Right. She really did.
Because if you would have, like, acted like a fangirl in front of her, that probably would have been like, "Oh, I don't think I want him on."
Oh, man. She shared that, you know, most cats just bug out, and, you know, or get nervous right. and all that. But mm-hmm. I actually kept my head. And,
right.
And then never knew that was going to be a performance like that the following night, though. You know. So.
Yeah, that was a moment. Or was that the, I remember watching it live, and just, I loved that she's being accompanied by a pianist, and that was just that, because I feel like that was her strong suit, her voice, and she didn't need, mm-hmm. you know, entire band to, I was like, that song, I was like, she could just do it. So I always appreciated that. I think I wrote about that actually, that was one of my favorite performances. I wrote it on the website. But I think, since I've been talking to, well, go ahead, since you are feeling entitled. Go ahead, Will. If you have some questions for
Well, thank you. Thank you for the Queen Q Lynn. I really appreciate that.
Here you go.
You know, 51 minutes. It will. Man, wow.
Listen, it's just me. So I'm comfortable. I'm in my zone talking to another fellow musician. I'm trying to get my questions out there. You have him on your show. Like, you see him almost every week when he does his show. Oh, yes. That's what I was going to talk about. If you want to talk about that. Those are the last questions I had was talking about doing a radio show and all that.
You want to steal those also, right? 51 minutes. You ask every question in the universe almost, but guess what? I still have something for you.
Because it's not like you don't see him when he's there. So you can have all the questions.
I don't think I interrupted while you were talking.
I'll be quiet. Go ahead. I'm over here to the side. I'm going to cut the microphone down.
Thank you, Johanna.
Oh, my God. Go ahead.
See, Will, man.
I got to put it every Thursday at this time. And I'm by myself, so I don't have nobody else to throw this in. Go ahead, Will.
Thank you, Q-Lin. Okay, 51 minutes. My goodness. Will, she thought she had stolen all of the questions, but I have some for you. You mentioned something, seriously, and getting on a serious note, and I want to thank you so much for taking out your time, because I know you're in New York.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yep. And Q-Lin's in Oklahoma. I'm in California, man. We love technology. But you mentioned something about a story, and which I thought it's really touching for anybody who listens, right? Real artists, real musicians, would you address the point that there is a story behind every song? Every guy who writes a serious song, there's a story behind that. But you mentioned something that was so relevant that the songs today, it really have no relevancy, and they're throwing words together. They really aren't telling a story. I want you to kind of elaborate on that as an artist.
It is. That's kind of like a lost treasure. You got the, we come from a generation of all storytellers where, you know why they lost their baby, like Tears of a Clown. You know,
oh, man.
The fear of a clown, you know, or, like I was saying, like Jasmine Sullivan, I bust the windows out your car. you know why the windows got busted up?
Marvin Gaye, what's going on?
And there's a lost treasure in that.
It's a real shame
because, cats, man, need to know what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, the beginning, the middle, or the end, you know, rather than, you finding different things to ad lib, but you said everything about nothing.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
And that's a treasure that's missing. Right now in this generation.
Right.
You get more hate or say for instance, I was in the studio last night, man, and I had asked two artists, I says, now you guys have two different, I was pleased at them that they have two different versions of the same song.
Hmm.
A clean version and a semi-clean version. But there were stories being told in it, that's what kept my attention. I go in the studio with an artist, I want to know the beginning and the middle and the end. What did you do that made you want to smack him? Because I want to know. or what did you do to make her want to leave?
Right.
Or what did you do to realize that person wasn't for you? You know, so that's me, man. I want to paint a picture that everyone can relate to it. You know, you can say, hey, man, I remember that. You know, it may be, say for instance, Earth, Wind, and Fire, After the Love is Gone. You can hear that song. That song's got to be 30 years, almost 40 years old. And you can hear that song, and as soon as you hear it, you'd be sitting down, oh, that's my jam right there. And you know, After the Love is Gone, you know word for word, because there was a story in there. You know, Luther's house is not a home. You know why that house is not a home. Not because they tore it down, but you know why a house is not a home.
That's right.
So that's what we meet missing, because, you know, a lot of stuff that's out now, 20 years ago, if it come on the radio, you know, what was that song about Superman? You know, Teach Me How to Dougie. 20 years ago, you think my generation want to hear Teach Me How to Dougie? Heck no. And you know, and you had to think a while and realize it was. You had to realize
I'm almost in my early 30s, and I don't even want to hear Teach Me How to Dougie. See, I mean,
you want to hear relevant stuff, man, that takes you from Monday to Monday. You know, and you might want to hear a song saying it's okay. And even if that song shared a story about it's okay, meaning that it's going to get better, so you riding home saying, okay, tomorrow's going to be better. I just heard this song, it's going to get better. So I got to go in there on the next day and smack my balls, you know. But we want something of substance, something that's going to take us from one situation to another, from one relationship to another, from one crisis to the other. Even though losing someone in your family, we need something that's going to actually take us from one situation to the other.
You know, and you're exactly right. I was just looking at a list of songs here right now. Atlantic Star, Secret Lovers, Black Ivory, Don't Turn Around, Aretha Franklin, Something He Can Feel, Michael Jackson, I Guess Can't Stop Loving You, Pick Up the Pieces, Leave Me Alone. I mean, you're right. They tell stories, man. And so, addressing something that Q Lynn brought up earlier, in her questioning, and she was talking about a shedding out there versus staying relevant. And to me, and what you were saying, let me ask you, I want you to address this. Is this how that you have to stay relevant? I mean, if, you know, because there's more to making money, right? To me, you got to have some substance to it, and I think that is so profound there.
Yeah, you know, I love shedding. I love shedding, you know, but my position is not to keep up with the next man.
Right.
You know, my thing is to keep my craft polished and be at the top of the game of where I need to be. You know, this is music. This is therapy. This is being a social worker. This is being a bartender, meaning you pouring songs into a cup or a glass every time you play, and you giving these people medicine. You're helping people grieve. You're helping people grieve from the loss of a loved one, loss of a relationship, loss of just being by your own self, you know. It's so many different things. Someone said, it's like being a mixologist. Oh man,
right.
You never know,
yeah,
that person that's turning on that song or coming to your show, what they went through. I'm gonna show you this short story. I was doing NAMM. It's called National Associations of Music Merchants in Anaheim, and I go every year. And this particular year, they did a show outside. And my cycle was Bootsy Collins and Verdine White. were doing a show together. And they were giving out some free tickets to some of the people, and I happened to give a pass to a young man that was sitting by himself, not knowing his situation. And it's something in music can help you get through anything. And this young man, we wound up talking after I finished the show, but this young man actually, a week before, buried his mom in D.C., DMV area. He wound up working for FDIC, and they sent him around the country, and they happened to send him to L.A. And he heard about the Bootsy Collins show, and he wouldn't have been able to get in because you had to be a member of NAMM. But I gave him, I spotted this guy out of nowhere and gave him a pass. That music did something for him because it took the pain away. But just that hour and a half or 2 hours, it took the pain away. So you never know, either what song or what song or what situation a person is in. So that's why I'm saying keep up on your craft, because I could have got up there and sucked. And he would have remembered me. He would have killed me along with losing his loved one, you know. That would have been associated instead of the joyous part of it. Oh, man, I saw Bootsy Collins and Verdine White. It would have been like, the guy that played with them sucked. You know. So it would have been, I wouldn't have wanted to be associated with him. So if I was been coming to the DMV area and be like, yo, man, you hear about this dude named Sean Will? Oh, the dude that sucked?
Oh, no. Not a good thing at all. You know, Will, yeah. I gotta have to ask you this. And I think you were listening to a couple of weeks ago. I did a show with, Imaja Jubilee. I believe it was on Monday Night Madness. And we were talking about how music is therapy. And you know, people feel better. And it was one situation where this cat had Alzheimer's, right? And the nurse started playing music that he, remember that? Remember that?
Yeah, put the headphones on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he just started singing, you know, and then took it off. He went back into that cocoon state.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Now, you know, and some of us aren't in that state right now, you know, but you know, music make you feel better, man. That's why my next question is when you are playing your music, right? What are you trying to convey to the audience? What stories or what story are you saying? Are you telling?
It depends on where my heart is and what lands in my head. I know we were talking a few weeks ago about the song I did with Eric Benet, When You Think of Me, and I laugh about it, but it's actually true. You know, you're trying to paint the picture. You know, like, hello baby, how you been? It's nice to see your face again. Seems strange you're coming around, but you're the one that put me down. We were such a happy pair till another man was there. Excuse me, I don't understand what you want from me. I painted that first part of it that made you want to know what happens next.
Hey.
Hold, stop the presses real quick. We're not just going to skip over that you just played one of his top best songs. It is. We got to rhyme his back. We're not just going to skate past. You're not going to skate past if you played on Eric Benet's When You Think of Me. We're not fixing to do that. You need to tell this story. First off, listen, I knew I should have did. I tried to dig as further mm-hmm. as I can, but.
That's why you
I
need to.
A little deeper in that. No, I'm talking about in terms of album credits, because that's what I did. I was on two albums that he did, the Jasmine Sullivan album, that one Jasmine Sullivan album, but I'm trying to get deeper in it. Tell me the story of that. Were you on that entire album, or were you just...
No, this, I went on as a ghostwriter for When You Think of Me and Love of My Own.
And that's in that album was A Day in the Life, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so were you listed on that song?
As a ghostwriter, yeah. Because you got to look at it.
Ebony and James Poyser, from what I heard, that was on our son of records out of that. See, that's why it's hard. That's why I always ask those exact questions of the albums, because you never know, because it's always... Because I heard a story, Sheila E., she was on Michael Jackson's, one of the songs off the Wall. I think it was, I want to get the song on, but I think it was just had a lot of percussion in it, and she played on it, but she never got credited for it. It was on Off the Wall album. And she played the percussion in there, and she said that on a podcast that she was on that Michael Jackson song, but she didn't get credit for it. But what's some other songs that that's listening right now that you're credited on or you weren't credited on that they would know?
Okay, whose question am I answering first? So, for Mr. Brown.
Well, see,
Mr.
you
Brown.
Know, that's still...
He asked the question. I didn't even hear him ask the question. My bad.
That's what I was answering. So, it depends on what
you.
Mood, where your heart is, what pain, what happiness. A lot of that comes from above. So you can't, I can't really say, for instance, I'm not going to wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to write a love song this morning. You know, I can't do that. A lot of songs that come on, man, it can be 3-4 o'clock in the morning. It'll wake me up. There's so many lyrics I wore on napkins and toilet paper. You know, it just varies.
Right,
so,
right.
But it's like I still always want to tell you, paint a picture for you.
Right. And so before we were so rudely interrupted, the question was...
Oh, my God.
The question was...
This is how my interviews go in the world.
The question.
Everybody helps me for nicely. The transition is right. I don't know what the transition is. Well, I thought he was just going to ask a few questions. Go ahead.
Oh, the transition. Well,
I didn't know when you were done.
Oh.
That's what I was saying.
Well, after you took up almost an hour, you know, I was supposed to be.
Show, okay? I can talk as long as I want to.
So, Will.
Go ahead.
And Will, you know, Will is a host. Will is a host, folks. Okay, before we go any further.
Oh, my God.
Will is also a host on Studio W, The Buzz. We got to get this out, right? A lot of people are listening. Hey, Adrian,
right.
Thank you so much. Frida, back there on the East Coast. Jewel, hey, thank you as well. We have Clayton out of Colorado Springs. We got A.T. Collins out of Houston, Texas. And just to say a few. But anyway, getting back to the questions here. Will. You have a show here on Mondays, and it's called The Quiet Storm. I want you to talk about that a little bit. That's on Mondays, and you also have a second show on Thursday nights, and that's The Artist Corner. Would you please tell the audience what that's all about?
The Quiet Storm is I give you something. I give you a theme, Sax Me, which was... all sax artists for that 2 hours. My thing is to try to unwind that Monday night, or unwind that Monday, from that first day of the week. I work. I try to be a mood changer. It's like that music is a drink, and that drink is a glass of wine, Bailey's Irish Cream, or whatever your drink is. It can be Kool-Aid but it's to try to mellow out your evening and transition you into the next day. And Artist Circle was where I take the first hour and I interview different artists. We've had Drew Davison, awesome smooth jazz guitarist from the Maryland area. Otley Reed, who does Jack's work for me. He's out of Chicago. We have Michonne Young, who will be on next week, out of Detroit. Awesome vocalist. Wonderful project that's out. Joe Del Rosario. It's like the second coming of Norman Brown. Micah's out of the DMV area. She'll be on. So we have different artists that will be coming on. Tom Brown, Eric Darius, and the list has gotten really long. So that's what I bring to the Buzz, Studio W, the Buzz on Monday and Thursday night. Program comes on at 8 o'clock Pacific time and goes, these are two-hour programs, and which is awesome. Awesome. It was something that I've always wanted to do as a kid, and I had a chance, thanks to Mr. Brown. And I always joke. I don't say it as a joke, but I mean it when I say on air, I say I want to thank Mr. Brown, not the one with the ashy knee, but Mr. William Brown. And, I thank him for the opportunity, able to do the show.
Oh, that's too kind. That's too kind. Well, you know, I tell you what, if I'm going to toss it back to Q Lynn a little bit, my last question has to be your music. And you've played gospel music before. You grew up in a gospel background. And I think you also were a little humble on some people that you're related to. But the question is, should church music be considered, or secular music be prohibited from the church sector? You and Q Lynn touched on that a little bit, and Q Lynn, she's always talking about, hey, look, I took some tracks from this so-called secular music, you know, and we put some church lyrics behind it, or it was the same track or the same beat. And I'm just wondering, and the big debate around here a few weeks back was, you're a church-going person, you shouldn't be enjoying the secular music, and would you consider your music in that realm secular or spiritual, gospel, or whatever it is?
Well, they say, Bible said with Jesus, what they say, the old saint Jesus was married to the backslider. you know what? That's a gray area, man. You know, it depends on where your spirit is, but like a lot of people are sampling, stuff. I just heard, Dietrich Haddock. Man, he sampled M2MA. You know, and it made me feel some kind of way, and I was like, okay, this sounds pretty good, you know. But it's a difference between you doing it at home and you're doing it at a concert, and then you're doing it in church. You know, there's a big difference, man, you know. Now, growing up, I understand what she was, because there used to be a Jamaican family used to come into church, and as soon as they came in, I was playing Jamaica funk. But I didn't know no better, man. I was like 17, you know. I didn't know no better, so now I know better, you know. and there's a pastor for a church. There's a church I play for, and the pastor was like, he came like a thief in the night, and I started playing James Bond, you know. So there is, you know, there's a fine line, you know. And let's put it this way. It depends on where your heart is.
My heart, I remember I made turn Prince's Erotic City into a gospel ballad. I was like,
that's a sin. Do you want that?
I go all the way left with it. I take some scandalous records. I was all the way left with it and turned it into gospel songs.
Let us bow our head and pray for her.
I'm a heathen. I'm a true Pharaoh heathen. Like, I was like 16 doing that.
You really need Jesus.
It was a song that I liked. I was like, let me take it. They all had gospel music. But Prince was really gospel music to me.
Yo, like, let me make a phone call. A revival.
No, seriously. Prince was gospel music to me. Because he played, most of his influence was church music. Because that's how he started. He would listen to the radio, and would hear was church music, and he would take church melodies and church progression, chord progression, and that's like when you hear "I Want to Be Your Lover," that's all church chords to me. That's all I hear.
So, how do you hold it? Back up there. Now you talk about that was like church music to you. So
it was.
Well, if that was church music to you, who was Darling Nikki?
What was
Darling Nikki? If that
Darling
is
Nikki.
Prince music,
it's more rock. Is it certain? Like if Prince, I feel like he went in and out. It was like mostly the songs that had a lot of gospel chords to it. Like "I Want to Be Your Lover," "Scandalous." Those were like church chords to me, and it's like nice to play during offering because when I hear "Joy and Recognition." When I heard it, it felt like the whole melody, the piano melody would sound like something I would play in church. It was like, dun, 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 dun. And I would just play that like during offering or something. And it would just, and the musicians would just back it.
Because
it sounded like gospel chords.
Oh,
like all you need sound like gospel chords.
Okay.
Purple Rain, you can turn that into a country, you can turn it into a country song, it could be a gospel song, just from them chords.
Mr. Brown, I am glad we from two different generations. Our sneaking to play stuff in church was like Ronnie Franklin, Windy City, or stuff like that. not they going down the offering, down the aisle for offering, and you playing Darling Nikki. You know, because only thing you know,
listen, I don't need no judgment because we had brother Chef Crawford. Chef Crawford plays R&B music in his church. He plays. Listen, he came on the show and verified. He just told me as long as I can sort of disguise it, then it's all right. He said, don't just be outright playing, you know what I mean, sexual healing and stuff like that.
But listen,
I'm just taking the chords and flipping it. Like, I'm playing it's not the exact melody, I'm just flipping the chords a little bit. Sometimes I change the key of it.
You playing the music to Darling Nikki, and somebody's in there, somebody sitting there in the pew saying, all he's thinking about is the lyrics. What is this? I met a girl named Nikki. You could say she was a sex queen. But hear me. You're playing the music, and Sister Johnson is saying, I met her in a hotel lobby masturbating off a magazine. Come on.
Now, listen. It's always been three times I played the exact purple cover song. It was Stevie Wonder's "Ribbon in the Sky," and what else was it? It was a Bob Marley song, and third one, it was on top of my head, and I forgot it. Oh, Whitney Houston's "You Give Good Love." Those are the only three times that I played it exactly like the record. The other times, and they didn't even know, it was only, when I played that, one of the deacons was like, oh, I know that song!
You played it!
It was only those three times. I only got trouble one time from a pastor. Man, that was it. The rest of the time,
they
were cool.
Take one time. Wow.
But I kept doing it. I would just flip the chords. It was like I just stretched the song out. Like if it was an upbeat, I would make it more of a lonic, like more ballad sort of, you know, I would just stretch the chord. But they would never notice though.
Didn't I tell you real
more like,
Have you asked for forgiveness?
No, she hasn't.
No, that's the God right there. Me playing Too Short in Church, that was my most blessed times. When I had money in my pocket, God was blessing me when I was playing Church.
She was
raining down during that pitch. I don't need to find out for
Mr. Brown.
Nothing.
Melissa Brown.
Yes, sir.
She playing too short while Deacon Thompson is crip walking.
That's why I'm saying Freaky Tales. I turn Freaky Tales into a gospel ballad. That's probably my greatest competition. I turned Freaky Tales into a gospel ballad. It was one of my proudest moments.
Oh, my.
Yes, it's called Freaky Tales.
Oh Lord Jesus, help us.
Freaky Tales. Wow.
Will, I told you, Will, I said, you come on the Soul Savage show. I said, it's wild. I said, it's a crazy show.
It's wild. Listen, I'm not saying to nothing, okay? I say this proudly. This is not fabrication. All that's true.
That's how I learned. Oklahoma. You're Oklahoma.
No. I'm in Texas now at this moment.
Yeah, she's on the run.
Wow.
I'm not on the run. Listen, I'm proud of those moments. And guess what? The thing is, just to add some levity to it, the musicians I played with, they were all older. They played, their prom was in their 70s, so they were very James Brown disciplined musicians. And so when they allowed me to play, when I would bring those songs, they allowed me to be played like I wanted to, because that's the only way I understood gospel music. And it wasn't
until I started connecting the dots. What do you play?
When I was playing in church, it was like late 90s when I started playing the drums. And then I transitioned to playing the piano, whenever I was 16, I believe. And then 17, they needed like an organ player, and I started playing the organ as well. But I didn't have any music. And the organist would show me some gospel chords to play, like when the pastor likes going in the E-flat. He would show me chords like that. He would show me the regular offering songs and the altar call songs, and you know, when after the preacher sings the choir song. But I didn't know any songs out there, so it was just me trying to think of stuff, and I would just play that, just something like a vamp or whatever while the music is playing. I just would think of that, but I would never play it outright. It was just that chord structure I was familiar with, and those were the songs I like, and so I would just take that and learn. But it was those musicians that were older, like they were older than, like they were, like I said, they were in their 70s. They're in their 70s now, so they gave me all the permission to do all that. They gave me the freedom to do that. And if they didn't give me the freedom to do that, I don't think I would have kept playing or whatever, took it professionally. I would have just, but I got that freedom to do what I wanted. And so it was never like that though, just to be clear. Back in the day, it wasn't like that. I couldn't do that. But as I got older, I got the permission to do it. So I did it.
Still play?
Absolutely. We had a gig last night. It was a Halloween party we did. Dallas at the Jewel Hotel. We did, they had like a little corporate gig. I did that. I do that to keep my chops up. But most of the time, I'm trying to transition to doing music directing. I'm putting together a band, and I got an actual docuseries. It's called Savvy Jam. That I just started, and I'm just getting a whole bunch of musicians together, and it's a process. I didn't realize how much a process it was putting together a band, but I just want to get that experience of, because I have so many ideas of taking so many different songs and putting them together, and I just want to keep creating in that process more so than working for somebody else. I want to do my own stuff, so that's my whole thing. But my last question, I actually want to play the game. We're going to get even more crazy. You thought this was crazy? Sure, Will. We're about to take it up a notch with this game we call What's Wrong With You. And it's a pretty wild game. But before I do that, I want to know, in terms of your musicianship, what more is it that you want to do? What more do you have to do in terms of your progression? Are you comfortable where your musicality is growing now, or is there more stuff that you want to do to add on to it?
I'm never satisfied. I never just settle. I continue to grow. I've actually just started going back and brushing up on some of the classical music that I used to play and that I learned early on in school. So, and get ready to branch off and doing some
some more movie stuff, some more movie tracks, and be doing some more pilots for TV as well. So my thing is just to continue to grow, to continue to get better as a person as well, you know. And the sky's the limit. You know, the sky's the limit. I'm never content of where I am. You know, if that's the case, I'd have still been in the street. You know, God bless me with a heart that, that want to continue to grow, you know, in this business. You know, there was a discussion today about, oh man, Will, how much you charge to do something? I said, people don't pay me to, can never pay me for doing music. They pay me for getting out of my comfortable bed, and going to sleep in an uncomfortable hotel bed, getting on a plane or dealing with a bunch of crazy people, but they can never pay me for what I love to do, you know, and I love to play.
Right. I don't think you asked the only one I had was what you were talking about, Eric Benet earlier playing on When You Think of Me. What's some more records or that album credits or ghostwritten credits that nobody would know you played on?
What was the album or the record that people wouldn't think I played on?
Both.
Hello?
Yeah, I said both, if you can. It's either one, it don't matter, record or album.
Bonnie Ray. People wouldn't have ever thought I played on that, and probably Maxwell.
Which album?
Which album? I think it was Something to Talk About, which was Bonnie Ray. And Maxwell's last one, Pretty Wink.
Oh, the Black Summer's Night. Oh, that song, Pretty Wings. Oh, wow.
Mm.
It was just that song, Pretty Wings?
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. And you said you played on Jasmine Sullivan. What was from that album that you played on? Was it the first, her debut album?
You know what? As a producer, I don't never know the album they come on.
Right.
We never know. You know,
right.
We always know the track that we've done, but we never know what album it's on.
Right. I don't even know why I'm saying asking, because I went to call it. It's so many records I played on during the 2007-2008 era, and I don't even know if they made any albums, because I know I thought I played on the album, and they never submitted none of the ones that I was on. I was like, oh, okay.
That's like asking you, so what tube is best for you by Crest? Is it the green one?
Man.
Is it the blue one, or is it the red one?
I don't know. I was just asking because they want to know questions like that, because most of the time when we have musicians on, they want to know who they played, what song it is, but I didn't know that. Now I gotta look that up now. The Pretty Wings one. But yeah, because Charlie Burrell was on, and he told, a lot of people didn't know that he was played the guitar on Aaliyah's More Than a Woman, and that was one of her top hits before she, passed away, but a lot of people didn't know that. So nobody knew that he played on that, even though he's probably credited on there, but it's just certain things people don't look up. And that's the thing, man. That's another thing. People, you know, because of, you know, streaming, you know, I think it's more accessible the way the music distribution is now, in terms of the, you know, going from 8-track to, you know, all those different, the vinyls is making a resurgence now. People are buying back vinyls now, but people are not buying CDs no more. Now a lot of stores are not taking people's CD. I mean, taking certain artists, record labels are not going to certain distributing to other stores like Walmart and Best Buy, stuff like that anymore. And so people are just streaming from Apple Music or Spotify and all that. So that's the thing. People don't look for credits anymore. That was sort of I think this new generation of young people, they're not going to experience what I experienced, because most of my first songs that I bought was on cassette tape. that was my first purchasing. That's the buying music was cassette tapes and CDs, and looking on the back of the albums, seeing LaFace Records and stuff like that, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, like the record labels, Epic Records and Uptown Records, Andre.
About cassettes?
Listen, I know. Man, we get deep on this show. I know everything.
I remember going to the drugstore and getting the eyeglass kit, eyeglass repair kit, and coming back and having some scotch tape, because I really think I invented the first remix on cassette. Because when the tape breaks, you gotta go and get the scotch tape and wind it up and all that. And then all of a sudden you playing the song and it's, so that's the first remix.
No, I get a pencil, get a number two pencil. It had to be a number two pencil where you can get it in there good and rewind it all the way back and get the tape in there. Oh my God, that was a time period. They're not going to experience that. It's just those certain moments waiting on, I forgot when records, most of the records that came out when I was growing up, was they all released on, I think, on Tuesdays, I believe. I think it was Tuesday, and it was a record store right next from the school, and I would just go there and get a cassette tape. It was like whatever was hot then. Side A, side B. They don't know about that. Like, what was that when you had to flip it over? Well, and then don't even talk about mixtapes, like you said, when you had you did your own mixes and had to listen to the DJ on the radio talk for like 5 minutes and had to put it on pause. And then if you put too much space in the tape, you had to rewind the whole thing back. Oh, that was a process. That was a process. And I just think it's just certain things, certain specificness in terms of how we listen to music, they're not going to experience anymore. But I'm glad that vinyl sales are finally coming back. That nostalgia is coming back. A lot of people don't know that vinyls, last year they were the top selling of albums. Like people, I think Solange, D'Angelo, when they released their albums, those were pretty big sellers. The Tribe Called Quest, a lot of those records. But now, you know, I think it's just about the music history. But before you go, I know we took up most of your time. I want to play this game with you. It's called What's Wrong With You. The premise of the game is basically, you pick what I pick. That's what it is. And it's a judgmental game. And so I'm judging your what you're listening to on your playlist. It's not vocal comparisons. It's just who you listen to more, in your music, or whatever form of music you listen to, who do you listen to more of on your playlist. And so the first one is Marvin Gaye or Teddy Pendergrass.
The game is rigged.
No, it's not.
Neither one.
Really?
Neither one.
I think you might. Well, that's the first time somebody answered it. Like, so you don't listen to no Teddy. Just for the sake of the game, who would you listen to more of, Marvin Gaye or Teddy Pendergrass? Neither. Still.
In my playlist, that if I had them in my playlist, who would I listen to? Out of them, no.
Well, more of their catalog do you like more? Who's more? I should say,
I got Loose Ends. I got Level 42. I have ELO, Electric Light Orchestra. I have Malcolm McLaren and Bootsy Collins.
Right.
I have a song in there called the Bootzilla Waltz.
Mm-hmm.
I have Chopin in my playlist. As a writer, you have to listen to different stuff.
You can't change it in your genre. Yeah.
I get it, but just the game in itself, just the catalog. Is
I'm not Billy Joel. Right. I got cast that, you know, it was like I'm a black nerd.
I have all
that
too, Billy Joel. That's, I love
I'm a black nerd.
Right.
I'm a black nerd, you know. I got some James Brown. I got some Prince. But I have Madhouse. And you do your research on Madhouse. There were several projects that Prince came out that were jazz projects, and he called them Madhouse. So I listen to, I dance to a different drum when it comes to being a listener. You know, I'll open my ears to all. You know,
right.
Like I say, I might come out with a Dixie album with a banjo in D flat. You know,
right.
But I'll just be different.
Right. This is a fast round game, so it's multiple ones that I'm going down the list. You just gotta pick either or. That's the game. And so who are you picking between Teddy Pendergrass or Marvin Gaye in terms of whose catalog you think is better?
Well, you know Marvin's better.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Point there. Okay, you're talking right. The next one, The Whispers or The OJs?
The Whispers.
You're talking right. Okay. The next one, Prince or Rick James?
Rick James.
There you go. You're talking right. Either way, you would have got bonus points for it. Now, this is, like you said, I make up the rules as I go, so this is a switch up, so you got to get all these.
I told you it was rigged.
So far, so you got to, listen, ignore everything he just said. This game is not rigged. The next one is specific to Michael Jackson. What album do you think is better, Off the Wall or Thriller?
Invincible.
Okay, we'll go with that. That is a great album. That's a bonus. I guess I could make that a bonus. Ain't nothing wrong with you on that one. Okay, the next one, Patty or Aretha?
Aretha.
I knew you was going to say that. That's usually a point deduction for a negative 20. I said negative 20 sometimes.
You
got 20. But
Aretha has more historical tunes than Patti LaBelle. Aretha was a storyteller, a trendsetter, a historian, a civil rights leader. Shall I go on?
Listen, I know that. That's why I make this game specific with music catalog, because I know you are not the first guest to tell me all this. I know all this. I'm talking about in terms of replay value, how many times you play her songs. So you playing more Aretha songs than Patti songs.
Yeah, because Aretha got more songs than Patti.
Oh, see, you was, E.B., my other co-host, he would have loved this, because he would have been saying you're talking right. Okay, all right, you stick with that. That's your answer?
Yeah, I'll stick with that. That's my final answer, and I don't need to call a friend.
You know what you say so adamantly? I'm going to give you a sure positive, a sure will. That's a sure will. I'm going to give you a sure positive that something's wrong with you on that one. So you get a negative 20 points
more
for that.
Than, okay.
So,
what? No. You got to explain yourself. Why
I just
come wrong with me?
Because I feel like you get some people, it's just a thing of terms. I've never heard anybody say, I like the honesty, okay? If you play a lot of Aretha songs, I appreciate that. But I'm just saying, I just hear more people say, it just, to my ears, I feel like people play more Patti LaBelle's records than Aretha records. And
no,
he has a lot of balance.
Am I the guest?
Hey, go ahead.
I'm gonna break this down to you. You sitting down, right?
I'm sitting down.
Okay. And you sitting down, Mr. Brown, too?
Oh, I'm right here.
Okay. All right. Okay. This is, you would play Patti LaBelle when he left you, when he stole from you, when you want to smack him, or your girlfriend and told a lie on you or someone, you would play Patti.
All right? Because why? Because Patty going to scream to you. She going to shout to you. She going to do all that. But when it comes to Aretha, Aretha's in that at the top of that list as far as a storyteller. She ain't going to go for that line because she wants you to respect her. All right? She gonna demand respect because she's a natural woman. Now, shall I go on? Don't let me get my towel like I'm preaching now. Okay. All right. Come on now. You got Patty. Patty is more of a screamer. You know, I love her. You know, I'm surprised the wildlife hasn't came and got her because she's been trying to fly away for a long time.
He almost shot. Oh man, listen, my love with Aretha goes way back. I love that whole Dinah Washington tribute album. Listen, that's me all day. Listen, I know it. The record Respect, you know, Otis Redding wrote, he made that a classic. He wrote that. Bobby Womack wrote a lot of great records for her. Chain of Fools. That's one of my favorites as well. Dinah Washington, though. That's where I learned the greatness of Aretha. Because Columbia were trying to make, Aretha Franklin, they were trying to mimic her of Dinah Washington. Because Dinah Washington made it possible for Aretha Franklin. If we gonna go, Dinah Washington is one of my favorites of all time. Top five.
Okay, but how the world they trying to make Aretha a copy of Dinah Washington?
Yes, they tried it. That's actual fact. They tried to, but she did her own thing. She had she had her so down. She that whole Dinah Washington album that she did, the tribute album that Aretha did. That's a class in itself of her greatness. If you want to talk about the passing down of legacy, when she passed away, I feel like that was a way for Franklin to blend all those genres and create the genre that we see, that we call R&B. Dinah Washington put all the blues and the gospel and the R&B.
I don't know who told you that, but just say no now. Just say no. Okay. All right, let's go to the next one.
What's not correct?
That's a hogwash. I don't know who told you that or who put that in a drink or whatever. But,
let's go to the next one. I'm trying to agree with that.
They tried to make Aretha another one of Dinah Washington.
Listen, you can remember yourself. It's factually true. These are facts. I'm saying that they were trying to make another Dinah Washington.
Oh, okay.
The first record label she went to, they were trying to make it into that. But I'm not saying that Aretha became that. I'm saying that that's what the record label was trying to do.
Okay.
That's fact. But go ahead. The next is Blinding Night of Babyface.
Babyface?
Okay, you talk. Okay, the conclusion of the game is there's nothing wrong with Mr. Sure Will. And, yeah, he won the game. There's nothing wrong with Mr. Sure Will. And, wow, that got intense at the end. I'm just saying that's what it was. I'm not saying that Aretha became what it was, that was that, but I'm just saying that was the track history of what it was. That's fact. That's what I read. I'm not saying that she made that come true. I'm just saying that's what they were trying to make her into, Dinah Washington.
Oh, okay.
I go back. I go deep, too. I'm young in it as well. I'm in my early 30s, but I know some stuff as well, and I'm a connoisseur of great music. I want to know the history behind. I wanted to know further beyond Aretha Franklin because she's so amazing. The jazz element to her voice, the history behind that, the fact she was self-taught blew me away. So, yeah, I appreciate you coming on. Where can they find you on social media?
They'll find me on Shorewell Senior, and then they'll find me shorewelljazz.com. That's where you can find my music. It's all on all the online stores. And I'll be coming to a city near you soon.
Wow.
Yeah, I look forward. I got to catch you live, man, because I gotta figure out when you're gonna be in Dallas next, so I can hear a show live. I gotta pay attention to your schedule. I gotta go. We go to what's the website where they can catch you live?
You can find me on my website, shorewelljazz.com.
shorewelljazz.com, and I'm going to it because I gotta see when you're gonna be near, so I can catch one of the shows and get a great live, you know, vibrations, energy of the great playing energy, because I know you've been doing it for so many years. Thank you so much for coming on. This musical
Thank
knowledge overflow, ever overflowing. I got a lot of gems. I feel like the listeners, the audience we have are going to connect with this, and you gave so many great gems. You're so deeply rooted into the history of music, and you're part of so many great records and tours that a lot of people didn't know about. So just thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, guys. I had a good time, and I am heading to the studio, and I will talk to you guys soon. Thank you so much.
All right.
No problem. Thank you. I hope I didn't scare you off with the plane and church.
We out, you did. You scared me. I'm going to pray for you.
It's all right.
I'm going to find Creflo Dollar and TD Jakes, and then the other one that he can send you that healing cloth, and for $19.99, and I bet you he'll send you the receipt too.
Listen, God will bless me since I've been playing Prince since 1999 in church.
Oh, okay. maybe somebody forgot and thought that was a chapter, 1999.
Thank you so much
you
for coming
guys.
On show.
All right, have a good one.
We'll be back, though. Right. It's one of his
All
kids.
Right. Bye.
Sure, we'll be back with 6 minutes of radio.
Oh, yes. That was Sure Will. Hey, had a great interview with Sure Will here on Studio W The Buzz. Hey, just keeping it locked right here. I believe that was Saved Today. Oh, that's a cool jam. Cool jam.
No, I mean the interview. That was crazy.
Oh, yeah. Hey.
Got intense going into the game.
Hey, that's all right. I told you the game was rigged. The game is rigged.
It's not rigged. Y'all feel so strongly about Aretha Franklin. Like you said, we had Sheryl Woodlong. We just interviewed him. Wow, we interviewed him. So we had him on for a while. I thought it was going to end.
Yeah.
After that, we just kept on going. But
that's
all right. I don't know if you had time for 6 minutes race, but just let people know why it's important to vote next Tuesday on November 6th before we wrap up.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I had some information on that. I don't know whether you want to, we just only have a few minutes left to go, but, and, you and I can talk about it. I got my rage points here if you want to hear it. We can do that and we can come back and we can talk about it a little bit. I think we have a few minutes that we can take. But anyway, in the meantime, folks, the rage. Oh, yes. And if you haven't been, I sure am. This is Studio W, the Soul Savage Show. 6 minutes of rage. Oh boy, 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 oh boy. You know, just when you thought you heard it all, there's something else. Made for TV, the reality show. Remember that? The Apprentice? Now we have The Apprentice USA. Every day there's something going on with this guy. There's a new scandal, a new announcement, a new scare. But guess what? Oh, just in about 5 days or so, there's voting time, election time. Like Kulin said, hey, just get out and vote. You've got to get out and vote because guess what? Your president wants to get rid of the 14th Amendment. Do you know what that means? The 14th Amendment, which is written in the Constitution and ratified by the Supreme Court. All right. On another separate case, there's a lot to go with that. I want to get into the details. But anyway, what it means, if you were born here, you are a citizen. He wants to do that by the stroke of a pen. He said he can do it with an executive order. Okay. Not so fast. Oh, yep. Check this out. Yet his, properties in Florida. Do you know that they are advertising right now that if you are to the Russian population, that you can come to one of his, properties in Florida. And guess what? They encourage you to have babies. You know why? So you can have a Russian baby on American soil. Okay. Oh boy. And this is evident. Look it up for yourself. There are third parties that are actually advertising this. So let me get this straight. You have people that are coming to the border. I'm not sure. I can't tell you that all of these are fine citizens or not. And you don't have some nefarious characters that will get into the crowd to try to do some things. I don't know that. But what I've seen mothers and I've seen young children and these people, can you believe they have walked thousands and thousands of miles. Guess what? Just to be told, no, you can't come in here. Well, I thought that if you did it through a legal process, I thought that you could seek asylum, especially if you are qualified to do so. But guess what? He says, yeah, if you do it legally, but then he turned around and says, hey, they're not coming in at all. Get over that. Okay. Now, isn't his wife a foreigner who only became a citizen after when? And then her parents came in through chain migration. Are you kidding me? Oh boy. Oh, in Georgia and in Florida, the races are heating up. And guess what? The old illustrious president, he said that Gillum was a thief. Oh my goodness. And what about, in Georgia where the races, oh, Stacy. Oh, did you notice that Oprah came down today? I'm glad. Thank you so much, Oprah, for that. And she made it clear. No, I'm not being paid to do so, to come here. Oh, Kanye West said he's been, oh, he's been used. No, Kanye West, you were screwed. And now, oh, because he's upset with Candace Owens because apparently, there was something to do with some t-shirts that had to do with this Blexit. Have you heard of Blexit? Blexit that Candace Owens is describing right now as being blacks getting away from the Democratic Party, exiting from the Democratic Party. But guess what? She may have something on her hands because I understand that she may get, oh, there's a legal question right now because that wasn't the original intent of Blexit. The co-founder of Blexit says, no, it was about equality. It had nothing to do with what you guys are talking about. So there might be something, but get back again. Oh, Kanye West. Oh, he was being used. I can't believe this. Oh, Statue of Liberty. You know, I saw something on, I believe that was on, the show on CNN, right? And it was Chris Cuomo. And he was talking about, wow, if we don't watch out, and I'm paraphrasing immensely here, if you don't watch out, the Statue of Liberty will be painted gold, and the torch will be an AR-15. I'm going to cut it short right now, and we're going to get back to Q Lynn, but this is 6 minutes of rage. Q Lynn.
Yes, we are. Thanks so much for that 6 minutes of rage. We are out of time. I just conclude with the savvy heathen talk is that it's important that y'all go out and vote next Tuesday in the midterm election. This is the most, all of the credible journalists have said this is the most important election, and it is. All these things that he just mentioned, that Will just mentioned, of all the corruption that they're trying to do with the Constitution, like these are constitutional, like things that's been here right forever, and he's trying to overturn it. And so I'm not going to get long-winded about it. I'll just simply say, go out and vote.
You have to vote.
Your vote does matter.
Yep.
Voting does matter.
You have to.
What they want is what the majority of the people that's in the House to be there. They want that to continue. So when y'all say there's no reason for you to vote, that your vote doesn't count, you're playing into the hand. So they want you to say that.
That's exactly right.
That's why they're creating all these, they're trying to create these last minute laws, the ones that are in the race, that are in the potential of losing, that are not letting registered voters get through, or in the whole thing with the criminal justice, the one that reform criminals that are trying to vote, they're trying to, a lot of the different states are trying to revoke that lean towards the Republican side of them keeping the House and the Senate. And so it's just important you gotta vote. I don't want to get
you have to. You have to.
Go out and vote.
Yep.
Next Tuesday, I'm voting next Tuesday. I'm going to my polling place and voting, going as early as possible. And so that's the only thing I have savvy human talk.
Well, I'm going out tomorrow, Q-Lan. I'm going out tomorrow.
Early voting. Oh, that's good. That's good. I know early voting started today.
Uh-huh.
In certain states.
Right.
So, yeah, get all that done. And so hopefully, listen, oh my God, I've been watching Bill Maher and I'm like him. It's looking good, but I ain't gonna get my hopes up, and so I'm just hoping for the best, but I'm getting anxiety like I did on 2016, and so hopefully it'll turn around. Well, I was kind of hopeful. It was in reverse. I was actually too confident that things were going to go where it should have been in 2016, and I have the opposite feeling this time around, so hopefully the opposite feeling will, I'll be hopeful going into next Thursday's show. And so, yeah, this has been Soul Savage Radio Show. Like I said, we had Sure Will at the top of the hour, but most of the show, actually. And it was a great interview. Like I said, gems were dropped. And so if you missed it, you missed a good one. If you missed it live, you missed a good one. And so, yeah, if we're good, we go out with some good vibes. Jeff Bradshaw featuring Tweet and Eric Robertson. All time love.
Oh, you know
one
what?
Of my favorite tracks.
Okay, you're gonna have to just hold on 1 second. I'll get that for you.
Oh,
yeah, hold on. That's all right. We'll play it because I do have a comment in the meantime. Anyway.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, you had last thought. I've got to yeah, final me, thoughts. Let, you no, got the final thoughts on your wrap up.
Oh yeah. So anyway, no, folks. What Q-Lynn said is exactly right. And Q-Lynn, I tell you what, I'm gonna threaten some of my friends, my so called friends. Because if no, I'm serious about this. Because if you don't go out and vote, I'm unfriending you. in person, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, wherever. Don't talk to me, because what you're telling me, you really don't care. You know, you really don't care. And because, like Oprah was saying today, she said, what you're actually doing, you are disgracing the people who went out and fought for the right for you to vote. You know, and that is deep. You had people that died so you could have this right to vote, and you said, and you would throw it away. You know, no. It's not right. And I don't care if you're family member, if you're friends, whatever it is. Nope. I'm unfriending you.
And there you have it. I don't know if that was a savvy heathen talk or a final thought for the night, but yeah, like he said, I'm just going to ignore you. That's what I am. That's what I'm going to do. If you come in, because your opinion doesn't matter at this point, if you're not going to be a part of the solution, if you don't, like, I'll just add on to what he said. That could be my savvy heathen talk. If you don't vote, then you're part of the problem instead of the solution. Society's issues. And so if we can end it like that, if he's ready.
Oh, I'm ready.
Get on out.
I had to get on out. I had to
get
that.
My co-hosts, EB and Whitney. I don't know what they got going on. I don't, Whitney's still under the weather, and then EB, I don't know, I think he had something else to do. I don't know if he's going to another concert or not, but he's going to be back on the 15th, and that's going to be a fantastic show. We got a great show planned on that day when he comes back, and I can't wait to let y'all know that week what we got going on. Yeah, man, I know next show. I just feel it in my heart, because we were supposed to have him on November 8th, but next Thursday we're gonna do an hour. I just planned this today, next Thursday we're gonna do a big Jim Wright appreciation hour. I'm gonna try to get this together, but yeah, man, it's just so befitting to do it, because he's supposed to be on next week, and he sadly passed away a month ago. So, you know, I just feel it right to do it. We got to dedicate an hour to him, so I'm gonna be getting some music together, Big Jim, some classics that you know, or just that you have in your playlist that you might have known that he worked on or produced. We're gonna have that for you, but yeah, I definitely got to do that next week, and we'll be back 4 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time every Thursday. We'll be back, y'all. Every Thursday. We out. Y'all get into these little cool jazz vibes. Yeah. We out.
I bumped into you again. Happy to see you, I can't pretend. I must admit, girl, you are looking fine. Won't you have a seat if you got some time? Yeah. Your sister told me you dumped that dude. Don't mind me, but I find that good news. My mama keep telling me you're the one. I can't lie, I don't think she's wrong. Forget the others, I know who you are. Cannot forget you. You're my all-time love. They're just distractions, just distractions. You're the best by far. Best by far. Yes, I know.
Bradshaw, All Time Love, featuring Robert Glasper, Eric Robertson, and Tweet. Hey, stay tuned. Got something coming for you in just a few short seconds here. But in the meantime, just want to give you a little idea about the lineup tonight, and it is still hot. We're going to play, an interview. No, not an interview right now. Interview coming up the Artist Corner, and that's at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. That's tonight on Studio W The Buzz. And then, before that, Mr. Melody, where are you here? You're here somewhere here. We're going to play, Mr. Melody, he's going to come in with his thing here, and we're going to do that right now for you. But I want you to do me a favor. Just tell your friends about it. StudioWBuzz.com. StudioWBuzz.com. Tell your friends 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Smooth jazz, R&B. Where are you here? Oh boy, okay. Mr. Melody, I've got something for you here. This is Mellow Moods, Radio, featuring, Arthur Shaw Jr., aka Mr. Melody, coming up at you right now. Hey, let's get it going.